We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Each week we talk with the manager of the Cubs, Joe Madden. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. And he is not far from his childhood home. Out there in Philadelphia, Joe Madden now joins me here on The Score. What's up, Joe?
Hi, Lawrence. How you doing? We are sitting here looking out the window into the downtown area of Philadelphia. It's awesome.
So what's it like for you to be, I mean, it's not Hazleton, but it's close. So what's it like to be home?
Oh, wonderful. We had the golf tournament on Monday, as you know, and that was a smashing success. Our proceeds went to the Hazleton Integration Project. Mark Loretta came down, Lester Schrode, Brad Mills, and now Masumoto and Ron Coomer all participated in the event. It was great. Anytime you get home like this, man, it's just there's a different feeling about it. We all know that. The food's different. The air's different, everything about it. Love it, all of that. And I actually almost went to college in Philadelphia. I was just a little bit too scared when I was that age. I had a chance to go to Penn or Temple or something like that, and I could not get into the big city. I mean, right now, living in the big city is all I've ever wanted to do. And now, at that time, that was kind of scary. So it's kind of neat to get back here and into Philadelphia. It's a really beautiful city.
So that leg of the golf tournament is already over, but there's another leg coming up on Monday. The Joe Madden Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic will be Monday, and we're going to be there at Bryn Mawr Country Club. It's going to be a lot of fun out there in Lincolnwood. Who's coming? Have you got your list together of people that are going to make it to the golf outing?
Brother, I'm sorry I don't have the list. I've been doing this, and Jerry Lasky takes care of all of that. I know it's a great list. I don't know if we're totally sold out, but I think we may be. You know, Rhino's been there in the past. I met Jim McMahon there in the past. Gary Fensick. A lot of the Bears have showed up, actually, and some old, like Popovich has been there. We've had some old Cubs legends also, and some of the current players, although I don't know if I have a list for this year. I don't know if the guys are going to be able to make it this year or not, but I apologize for that. I know Jerry can get you the list, but it's normally littered with a lot of really fun people. The track is outstanding there at Bryn Mawr, really beautifully kept golf course, so always looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I actually talked to one of the guys that I know is going to be there, and that's Tom Dreesen. He had some very nice things to say about you. Mr. Dreesen's pretty great, so I'm going to actually share some of that coming up a little bit later on in the show. Joe, what's it been like to navigate all the interest in your job status?
Oh, it's honestly, it's not that difficult. Because, I mean, Theo and I and Jed and the Ricketts family, we're all on the same page with all of this. Everything, I mean, the stuff that's said or read, or questions asked, it's just obligatory stuff based on the situation, and I get it. And I do my best to answer the question as well as I can. But I can't emphasize enough. We're having a wonderful year in regards to communication, the interaction, the personal relationships, the professional relationships, all that stuff is in place. But when you get asked the question, I try to be as honest and transparent as I can with every question. But that's just the nature of the beast right now. I'm focused on us winning. I'm focused on, you know, like last night, Quintana pitches probably the best game I've seen him throw as a Cub, and we could not pull it off. We couldn't get enough runs. Again, the road woes continue. We have to get better there. So honestly, I only think about it if I'm asked about it. It's not on my mind like you might think. It's not. Like I said, I trust in our group. I feel strongly about our group. That'll take care of itself when the appropriate time comes. But for now, to only score two runs last night and lose to the Phillies, that's what my thoughts are.
How would you say that, like, your relationship with the collective, you brought up Jed and Theo and everyone else involved on the management side, has evolved over the last five seasons?
You know, it's I have this tendency to I kind of be on the optimistic or positive side of my life, but I couldn't be happier personally. I mean, the people I work with you can't beat it. You can't beat it anywhere. I've spoken about that. It's true. you know, as a family, the Madden family is grateful that we've gotten this opportunity to work in Chicago. It's the best. We all get that. But I could continually talk about the relationship. It couldn't be better. But still people will want to put their spin on it because that's the way the world works today. That's how information is processed and the speed of it, even if it's not vetted. So there's nothing I can do about that except to tell you that the relationship cannot be better.
Let's talk about Jose Quintana. He was magical last night with the 14 strikeouts. He's been pretty good, only four earned runs in his last three starts for you. And if you go back even further, it's been a good run with a couple of hiccups over the last couple of months. So when he's right, what is he doing right?
Well, last night, everything was going on. You saw the breaking ball, the curveball. The changeup was outstanding also. I don't remember if it was the fourth inning. Jonathan Lucroy said to me, man, this is fun catching him tonight because everything's working. The backdoor breaking ball was outstanding. Everything Q did last night was right on. The home run by Realmuto, kind of like an elevated over-the-plate changeup. He got him to right central. And the first at-bat by Harper, that was outstanding for them because that pretty much precluded him from going an extra inning. And even, like, you know, the drop pop-up and the at-bat by Harper to start the game probably kept him out of the seventh or even the eighth inning. His stuff was that good. And it was hot. But he had Q is in such great shape, and this guy is a man's man. He's a professional, and I'm so happy for him, and of course for us. But for him, how he takes care of himself, his dedication to the team, it can't be better. So that was everything coming together last night. And Jonathan Lucroy was impressed too.
I haven't had a chance to really talk to you about Lucroy since he's joined the team. What does he give you guys?
This guy is totally into it, man. He is totally into it. Brief time I've gotten to know him, he's got that eagerness about him per pitch, per moment of a baseball game. He's a baseball guy, and he's been around for a bit. He's had some tremendous success. He's been an all-star. He's been one of the best catchers in the National League and in baseball. But it's in the best way, childlike. I mean, the guy's really eager about the game, and he's animated. And he's there to support everybody else. It's a lot of fun being around him. It's a lot of fun being around him, and he's going to really help us moving this thing forward. Like I said, he's had a great body of work to this point. It's going to continue. He's in great shape. But there's an eagerness about him. Like I said, his childlike method, that he just loves what he's doing, that I really think is infectious for the team.
When a new catcher comes in, and we talked a little bit about this with Maldonado when the team brought him in, how long do you feel like it takes for guys to catch up? And Lucroy is a guy that has a lot of great defensive catching, especially when it comes to framing in his background. So when it comes to him calling a game, when do you feel comfortable to let him kind of be in charge of what's going on along with the pitcher?
Well, we always are. I mean, but we're also, you have to understand, and I can't describe it entirely, but we do such a wonderful job. Mike Borzella, Tom Hottovy, Brad Mills, all the guys that put the game plan together, and everybody trusts. Our pitchers trust, our catchers trust in the process. Now, we never exclude the pitcher and the catcher from this process. Of course, they have input, but our guys' prep is that good. I'm telling you, it's that good. As a manager, I will consult with them constantly, like when we're going to bring a relief pitcher. We talk about it before the game, but game in progress. Who do you like here? And then it'll come down. We like the spin. We like the elevation. We don't like the elevation. they know the plan regarding who we're facing, and they know specifically our guys and what they're capable of doing. Now, I know our guys really well. I like, for instance, not playing the Phillies in a bit. I rely heavily on them for that. So my catchers should, too, is my point, and pitchers should, too. Our work is that good. It's that intricate. It's that right on. And there's this great synergy among everybody. So with Jonathan coming in, I would say at least two times around catching everybody. By that time, he should have a pretty good feel for the starters, the relievers. That's got to happen more quickly because you could see these guys more often. But he's a quick study. He listens well. He had that little wristband on last night. I saw him checking in on a consistent basis. I'm telling you, man, this guy's a pro. So I'd say a couple times through the pitching order, he'll have it down pretty well.
Last night was kind of a weird game because guys were making contact. It wasn't a swing and miss type game, but they weren't getting great contact off of Vargas. How did he keep guys off balance?
Yeah, man, it's just that there's some guys that could throw below the hitting speed too, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. Jamie Moyer did it for 100 years. I kind of had that Philly uniform on last night. I was seeing Jamie out there pitching all over again. He's able to get in when he wants to get in, the changeup down and away. He'll elevate. He just never wants to throw the ball over the plate. I never caught actually in the game, but I used to catch constantly like Tommy John and Jeff Zahn back in the early 80s with the Angels. And that was same thing. These guys, you when you warmed them up on the side, they never wanted you to sit on the plate. It was like an inch or two off each edge, and they could nail it all night long. So Vargas knows what he's doing. He's a Long Beach State guy, which I have a great admiration for the program there. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing, and if his arm feels good and he's executing his pitches, he is going to elicit weak contact, and that's what he did last night. So he moved the baseball, but it was rarely on the barrel.
Were you happy with the at-bats?
Yeah, listen, it's just not easy. I mean, here's the thing. Game in progress, I'm in the dugout, so I get to watch and feel our guys. They were awesome all night long. Before the game, during the game, we get down a little bit, but they're there to support one another. It was frustrating. It's frustrating when you face a guy like that sometimes and you just can't get to the barrel. So it's not about effort and attitude. It was just maybe like last night. We've had trouble with lefties in general, and last night we just couldn't get the barrel to the baseball. So, the way the method going into the game was great, the results weren't so good.
Speaking of good at-bats, Nicholas Castellanos, since you've gotten him, has been a weapon for you. How impressed are you by him?
Again, I really am, and I could say a lot of the same things about him that I just said about Jonathan. A real eagerness for the game. The guy, pregame, when we do the handshakes, he comes rolling down there. He says, happy opening day, and he means it. He treats every game like that. The other day, I couldn't take him out of the game. In Cincinnati in the bad game, I had to leave him in and take Rizzo out, and Brian and Javi had no spots left. And I says, how are we doing? He says, hey, by giving me one more at bat, I get one more chance to be that closer to 3,000 hits. And I've never had anybody tell me that. It was awesome. So he's a wonderful young man. He's got a lot of energy, boy, and it definitely the other guys can feel it. So he's beyond all the hits and everything that he's done really well. He's played some pretty good defense too to this point. It's him. He's got this eagerness for the day that I love.
And I imagine for him, considering the way things have been going in Detroit, and that's a ballpark that's really hard to hit in Detroit, being put into a situation where he has a chance to play for something, the amount of juice that must give a guy must be immense.
Of course it is. And again, anybody that wants to argue that point, just realize everybody's a human being, and just put yourself in that situation when you go from really a not a good position with a lot of potential at the end of it to where you do. And all of a sudden it's going to bring out the best in you, especially if you're good. And right now it's bringing out the best in Nicholas, and we're really, really happy that we have him. You're right. I mean, that ballpark in Detroit, he played right field, and I don't know if you've ever been there, but that really juts out into this huge right center field where they have this little auxiliary scoreboard. There's so much area to cover, and he hits the ball that way a lot, right? Right field, right center. And it's going to be into a Death Valley there. So a lot of his numbers have been mitigated just by playing in that ballpark. He's a really good baseball player. Like I said, he really is into it. So he gets into a little bit more hitter-friendly environment, and you're going to see a lot of good things occur because he's an inside-the-ball kind of guy, which I love. He's got great hands, and he never, ever gives up a pitch. He's engaged in each pitch.
It could be a pretty special night for Cole Hamels tonight, going back to Philadelphia. He had a ton of success there. When it comes to something like this, these special moments for guys, do you acknowledge it or do you let them acknowledge it and then react to it?
Oh, yeah, I stay out of the way. I mean, in a meager method, I could compare it to when I left the Angels and went to the Devil Rays and had to go back to Anaheim for the first time. I'd worked there for 30 years. So there's a lot of stuff going on when you walk in that ballpark. So now Cole going back to Citizens and as a World Series champion and playing and having so many wonderful memories, he's going to think about it. But I mean, after the as he gets into that first inning, I'm certain it's just going to be about getting Philly hitters out. Cole, listen, he's another dynamic young man that I love being around too. He doesn't need any help from me whatsoever. He He knows how to deal with the moment. And I'm looking forward to watching it tonight, actually, because he's coming off of a tough outing. Before that, a pretty good one as his first one back. So I really anticipate good tonight.
Are you looking forward to the Little League Classic stuff this weekend?
Absolutely. Totally am. I mean, that's the one thing on these different venues that MLB does. This one, to me, makes the most sense, and I love it. William Sports is about an hour from Hazleton, and I've never been there, which is really strange. They also have this tremendous mural program in the city, and I've not seen that. It's something I've been wanting to do in Hazleton, where they have artists with murals all over the city of Williamsport. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to see all that, but that's fascinating to me, too. But then the Little League World Series, when you're a kid, all you have to say is Williamsport, and you know exactly what we're talking about. You know where it is, and you always wanted to get there. So it's great for these kids. It's a great experience to be involved in that for us as major leaguers. This is my shot. This is my shot to get back into Little League mentally and check it out. I cannot be more pleased that we were selected. I can't wait to get there. We all can't wait to get there.
I'm kind of digging the pullover jerseys, too.
Oh, no, listen, that would be one thing I'd love to see come back. Much more comfortable with the pants that just button right there. That's like putting on jammies. It's just it's a good look. It's a clean look, and it's a comfortable look. So hopefully that we'll take a solid look at that into the future, because it'd be a great uniform for on an everyday basis.
I know Ian Happ had a rough night in the field, but him at the dish since he's been called back, he's been really aggressive. He's shown a lot of power. What things did he work on in the minors, and what do you hope that he continues to do?
Well, a big bit is pitch selection. He got kind of blown up the other day. Some really bad calls on elevated fastballs that were balls. And that's the thing. You're at the mercy of the umpire, too, where those pitches need to be called crooked. Because when a guy's working on not swinging at a pitch that really is a ball, and then he gets banged for it by an umpire, that's tough. That's a tough one, because he's been spending all this time diligently working on this method, and then it's taken away just arbitrarily. So that's it. I mean, he's been really much better at pitch selection. He's been better with two strikes, moving the baseball. He's choking up a bit. I think that home run he hit against Trainin at home was with two strikes that bombed the right central, choked up a little bit. So he's got a great method going on, and like we've talked about, his right-handed side has gotten a whole lot better too. Give him credit. He's done a lot of good work in the minor leagues, and it's really paying off.
How do you know when to go after an umpire and when to lay back? Because there were some calls last night that you just sit there and go, I've never seen that ball called a strike before. I've never seen that ball be called a ball before.
Well, first of all, Marty Foster's a really good fellow. Number two, Google or YouTube the time that he called Ben Zobrist out on a strike three against Joe Nathan several years ago that gave Joe Nathan his 300th save. That was even worse than last night. So, I mean, Marty's an easy target. I don't want to go out there, and I was yelling at him from the dugout. I've been through that before with him. So there's history involved that I did not want to take to another level last night. I want to believe that he knew he screwed up. That's in the most, worst moment. And how about Tony, how well he handled that whole thing afterwards? I mean, I give him credit because he was much more civil than I could have possibly been. But again, Marty's had those moments before, and I've been involved in him. So it's again, there's a human thing involved in that I just backed off just a little bit there, because I think he knew how badly it screwed up.
All right, Joe, I reached into the box. Got a couple fun questions for you. You ready?
Okay, you got it.
All right. What makes you say, "What was I thinking?" when you look back on your own life?
Oh. The number one, I can't mention. Number two, what was I thinking? Wow. No, the number one, I'm not going to reveal, because that one, wow, what a turning point in my life. What was I thinking? Maybe what was I thinking when I quit football at Lafayette College? And I'll tell you why that's on the forefront of my mind. I just got this gig from this email from one of the guys that works with the quarterback club there, having a big event for Coach Putnam, who was the head coach at Lafayette in 1972-3 when I was there. And I played, had a really good freshman year. And then I went back for fall practice in August. And I just had enough playing football. I was going to be the starting quarterback my sophomore year. And I went in there, and Coach Joe Serra was the guy that recruited me. I drove out with my 66 Volvo all packed up to the gills to go back to Hazleton in the middle of August. I walked in with my playbook. I told Coach Sarah I was retiring. And he said, no, you can't do that until you talk to Coach Putnam. So I had to go in there and talk to Coach Putnam. And I handed my playbook back. He tried to talk me out of it. I said, no, my mind is made up, and so forth and so on. So I think that was a youthful decision. I really just wanted to play baseball. But it could have led to other things that I'm not even aware of till today. But the last point is, a couple of years ago, I called Coach Putnam for the first time in, I don't know, 40 years, whatever it was. And he had thought that he had done something wrong, and that's what led to me not wanting to play anymore. That really totally bummed me out. And I was so happy to reconnect with him so I could set him straight and say, no, it wasn't you. It was me as a 19 or 20-year-old at that time making a decision. So I'd like to know what I was thinking at that particular moment.
Okay. Here's the last one for today. If you could be any person, dead or alive, for a day, who would it be and why?
Well, there's several right there. And I could go all over the map with that one. That's very interesting. It could be like Leonardo da Vinci. It could be Michelangelo. But more contemporarily, I think it'd be Mr. Rickey. Because I think Mr. Rickey's impact on the game is not talked about enough, and how far-reaching it actually is. The fact that he was so far ahead of his time in farm systems and scouting and development, the fact that he brought Jackie Robinson into baseball. I've read different books about him. I find him really fascinating. So to be able to exist as him inside his method of thinking regarding baseball, not necessarily everything else, but baseball-wise, I would find that fascinating, what he did and why he did it. And every time I met somebody that had worked with him, whether it was Preston Gomez or Don Zimmer, and all these old dudes that I knew back in the day, Spider Jorgensen, all these guys, I always wanted to know about Mr. Rickey, and I find him very, very fascinating about baseball history.
Joe, as always, I appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the time in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh, and have fun in Williamsport.
I promise, Lawrence, I shall. And listen, it was great in the studio last week. I thank you. And the albums, I still got to get back to the Flamingo Room to listen to all of them, man. Thank you. That was very kind.
Oh, man, I was happy to do it, and I had a lot of fun trying to find the right tone to set, and I'm glad that you appreciated it.
You nailed it, brother. Thank you.
Right on. That is Joe Madden, the manager of the Cubs. We talk with him every week. So, look, usually it's Tuesdays at noon. Obviously, you're like, well, today is Wednesday, Lawrence. Yes, you're right. And guess what? Next week, Monday, I'm going to talk with Joe, because Monday is the charity golf outing. I'm going to do the radio show from out there. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm kind of jacked about the Williamsport game, because it's just going to be fun. Like, those guys going back, do you know how many people are going to – they're going to mob Javi Baez? Because all these kids, their favorite player is Javier Baez or Mike Trout. So Javi's going to show up there, and it's going to be like the king has returned.
Can I make a programming note here?
Sure.
About that interview? I really want to know what that number one was.
I have some ideas about it.
We got to find a way to get that out of him. Like,
I feel like that's a conversation.
Straight to podcast?
No, I don't think that he shares that one on the air, Tony. I think that's a conversation where me, you, and Joe are in the Flamingo Room after a couple of bottles, not glasses, bottles of wine.
How about we make, when they come back, me and you, we go to pregame and have a conversation with Joe?
Well, not pre, he's managing, so we can't do that. Like, we're not going to, I don't want to bore him. I'm talking about the next time that he does a show from Madden's Post. After the show is over, we go up to the Flamingo Room and we listen to some Rolling Stones and have a couple bottles of wine. And then I think Joe might be open to talking about some stuff.
What do you, if you had to guess, what do you think it is?
I feel like Joe robbed a bank. Like, I've been watching that movie with the old bank robbers, and I just kind of imagine that him as the Robert Redford character, just like robbing banks. So maybe that's what it was.
He looks back on it now. He's like, what was I doing? I'm like, a manager of the Cubs.
What was I doing? I was robbing a bank. Sorry, we need to take a break. I want to talk some baseball. And as much as I do want to continue to talk about some of the cool stuff with the Cubs, and last night was a little bit weird, there's a White Sox thing that I want to discuss as well. I'm going to do that next. Someone over there is on fire figuratively speaking, and we need to discuss. That's coming up here on The Score.
3-2. On the ground, up the middle. Sanchez. Another complete game for Ivan Nova. He was awesome against the Astros tonight as the Sox win.
Jason Benetti on the call. The White Sox split a doubleheader with the Astros yesterday. Gerrit Cole got scratched in the second game with some hamstring tightness. And Chris Dubinsky got the start. The White Sox scored some runs, but it's been Ivan Nova that has been extremely impressive. Let me throw some numbers your way about Nova. Nova, over his last five starts, 37 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 17 strikeouts. There's complete games in there, and an ERA of 0.48. He's been really, really good over the last five starts. He's 32 years old. I'm not saying that this is a harbinger of, well, you know, he's someone who fits inside what they're doing. To see him pitch competently for the White Sox, for the most part, in the, what, 9 starts that he's made for them, has been very enjoyable. Because you think back to the first half when they could not, they had the hitting, but could not get competent starting. Just competent. I'm not even talking about you're going out there and you're blowing people away, even though yesterday he was magnificent in a complete game 4-hit effort for the White Sox. But just the competence that we've seen from him in his starts for the White Sox has been very, very refreshing. Ricky Renteria had this to say about Nova after they got the complete game and the win in game 2 of the doubleheader last night.
How about Ivan Nova? Exactly the way we scripted it. We talked about getting a guy to, you know, pitch, execute, keep us in the game. And the guys were able to jump on the, obviously it was a change in their starter, and the guys were able to jump and give us some runs, and Nova was very, very efficient. And even going up into the last inning, I think he had retired the last, I don't know, 12 or 6 or whatever it was, 8. Did a nice job. Great job. Full, complete game.
How important has he been to your rotation and your team this year?
Really important, and I think it's been obviously a little more evident as of late because he's actually gone very deep in a lot of the ball games recently. And it's just been very, very professional. I mean, just his demeanor. He's got the experience. He's been around a while, and he just goes try to do his stuff. Doesn't try to do too much. Stays within himself. Tries to hit his spots. You can see that working down below in the zone still works in today's game, as much as, you know, everybody talks about the elevation and this and that. But today he seemed to be able to do what he needed to do to eat up 9 innings of baseball.
Yeah, I would say he did more than just eat up the 9 innings. And with Nova, back in June, his ERA was 6.28, and now it's dropped to 4.51. And in last night's game, he retired 16 straight. Ricky was like, I think it was 8 or 4. No, 16 straight before there was a 2-out hit in the ninth. It was a really impressive start, and he's had a couple of them in a White Sox uniform. That's as far as I'm willing to go. I just felt that it needed to be recognized that what they've gotten from Ivan Nova over the last 6 weeks has been competent Major League Baseball starting pitching.
Don't stop.
That's all. By the way, if you need the flash, if the competency isn't enough to keep your attention, if you need the flash, just look up Luis Robert from yesterday. Making catches.
Oh.
It's pretty. Oh. Isn't it great, Tony?
Oh, man. It's every day. It's every day he's doing something new. He's going yard. He's having these amazing catches at the wall. It's, oh, man, if you're a Sox fan, just, and you're having problems with watching this regular season, just go and watch Luis Robert highlights. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun, and the Charlotte Knights do a good job of tweeting it out for you. so you can get all your Luis Robert that you need. We need to take a break. There's something that I want to get into, and I need some time to kind of flesh it out, and it's this relationship between Jay-Z and the NFL. I want to talk a little bit about that and see if I can come to some consensus. Tony and I were talking about it before the show, so we thought that we'd bring the conversation to the air. At 1 o'clock, I have a really fun and interesting interview that I want you to hear, or at least a portion of it. It's a House of L score collabo. Tom Dreesen, and I'm like, you're probably sitting there going, well, wait, who's Tom Dreesen? Because you're a little bit younger than most people. I would say look him up. Fascinating dude. And we had a great conversation about the Cubs. I'll share that conversation and tell you a little bit more about what we discussed overall in the 90 minutes that we were in the room together. But just look him up. He's a guy from Harvey that has made quite a career for himself over the last 60 years. And he loves the Cubs, and he'll explain why. But when we come back, I want to talk about this relationship between Jay-Z and the NFL, and if Jay-Z owes anyone anything, particularly Colin Kaepernick, when it comes to this venture that he is embarking on with the league. We'll do that next here on The Score. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Enjoy the fact that you are hanging out with me. Until then, the crew, one young Tony Gill, one Rick Camp. You hear their voices throughout the show. At 1 o'clock, I have an interview with Tom Dreesen that if you're a Cub fan or you're someone who loved Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr., you're absolutely going to love. I'll discuss that in a second. The bottom of the hour was brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald and number 25 Wildcats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. So the news came out yesterday that Jay-Z's business, Roc Nation, is going to join the NFL. They're going to become partners, and inside that partnership, Jay-Z and his group are going to work with the NFL for and produce the halftime show. It's interesting. It's a lot of people have called it surprising that they would be in business with the NFL. And considering some of the things that Jay-Z has said, how some people reacted to Beyonce's, not that a husband and wife should always have their business mingled, but how some people felt about Beyonce's performance at the Super Bowl a few years ago, that Jay-Z would want to become a business partner with the NFL. I would also go back to some of Jay-Z's other lyrics. I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman. When discussing this, and I saw some people react to it. I was looking at Jemele Hill react to it and Mike Freeman, some people. And I was kind of like, I know that Twitter is the place where we go to react quickly to things. And we try to have strong opinions about stuff. I'm still trying to work my way through this. And I know that I am a living contradiction to some of this, because there are things about the NFL that I absolutely hate. And I've also made a career out of covering the NFL. And those things range from issues of social justice that they seem to that I align more with than other people do, to issues of taking care of the actual athletes. But I have benefited from it, and I offered that hypocrisy to you fully in discussing this. To me, it's I find it Eric Reed, the player who is still kneeling, he's still out there protesting. He's a friend and a confidant of Colin Kaepernick. Like, he was kind of giving some disappointment on Twitter earlier today, and I find myself not sure on how to feel about this. And here's why. This is the stuff that I'm working through. If the idea is for there to be change, and one of the things that Jay-Z has said is that there's part of his role is going to be to work with the NFL to understand some of the issues and some of the missteps that, that they might have. And it's funny because Roger Goodell actually told the New York Times this today, quote, "We don't want people to come in and necessarily agree with us. We want people to come in and tell us what we can do better," close quote. That's what he told the New York Times. If the idea is to affect change, I feel that there are multiple ways that one can go about affecting change. And it depends on where you stand. For Colin Kaepernick not having a job, I still think is ridiculous. And all you need to do was watch last night's Hard Knocks episode. That's all you needed to do. If you were like, well, wait, they out there with the Peterman? Nathan Peterman is out here getting love.
Oh, man, what? The Peterman? Still out here?
The Peterman. Guess who is? Okay, so Tony, have you watched Hard Knocks this week?
I have not, no.
Are you going to watch it?
Probably not. You can tell me.
Okay, so Derek Carr is the starter. By the way, he is super likable. Every time I see that guy in front of a microphone, I go, I really like that guy. He's cool. You know who his backup is?
It's the Peterman?
No, it's Mike Glennon. And the backup to Mike Glennon is the Peterman, Nathan Peterman, the guy who gave you the worst starting performance like ever in a football game.
That quarterback room is awful.
It's trash. And so I sit there and go, wait, if the Peterman and Mike Glennon is getting run, and it was almost, I laughed so hard because me and Panther are sitting there watching it. And I was like, Glennon is trash. And immediately the next thing that happened was he fumbled a snap. Like the next thing that they showed on Hard Knocks, I'm like, this guy is terrible. And Gruden's just lighting into him on the sideline. It made me laugh. But the, you know, going back to Kaepernick, that I see guys like that are still in the league, I get why he's upset.
It's like, come on, fam.
Right. And I mean, he put out the video a little while ago of him working out, that he still gets up at 5 a.m. and he works out and he's trying to, you know, the Titans are trying to figure out whether Marcus Mariota or Ryan Tannehill should be their starting quarterback. Anyway, that's one way to try and affect change. It's to try and bring attention and eyes to something that you feel strongly about by protesting. That's one way to do it. I think that we should keep our minds open for other ways to do it. And when it comes to getting power, what Jay-Z did here was he kind of grabbed some power. And this was at the request, apparently, according to what WEEI is saying, of Robert Kraft, that Robert Kraft brokered this. And it becomes a question of, do you have to be perfectly aligned socially, politically with people to try and affect change? Does it have to be a 100% perfect circle to try and benefit the greater good? Like if you reach detente on a particular subject, let's say prison reform, and you're coming from it from one direction, or one part of the political spectrum, and someone else is on the other political part of the political spectrum, and you come together with an idea, does it matter that the two particulars don't agree on other stuff? I don't have an answer to that question. These are just the things that I'm trying to work through here as Jay-Z and the NFL become partners. And can we only align with people that we are aligned with? And for anything that happens in the NFL, does it have to go through the filter of Colin Kaepernick? That was the first thing that I thought. Because people were like, did he talk with Kaepernick about this? Does Jay-Z have to? I think it would have probably been the smart thing to do. But does he have to do that? And anything that has to do with a relationship with disenfranchised communities and the NFL, does everything have to be siphoned through Colin Kaepernick for us to try and move things forward?
It's a little bit hypocritical on Jay-Z's part. But again, people have time to think about things and, you know, change their minds on certain things. But last year's Super Bowl, he had problems with one of, you know, one of his artists is basically under him, under Roc Nation,
Travis Scott. Yeah.
Doing the Super Bowl. He was vocal about, you know, Travis Scott doing the Super Bowl and his, I don't know, his displeasure with his artist doing the Super Bowl at the time. And then to come the following year that he now is working with the NFL on the Super Bowl is a bit hypocritical, but he could say, you know, hey, we have to attack these things, you know, from different angles. And I think what Malcolm Jenkins, I think that was his point, you know, going forward, because he truly believes in what Kaepernick is doing, but he worked out a deal with the NFL where they dedicated money to help issues that the NFL seems to, you know, have an oversight over, and some people had a problem with what Malcolm Jenkins
including
was doing.
Eric Reed.
Yeah, including Eric Reed.
And I didn't like that. I didn't like that there wasn't room for there to be different avenues to come to some of the same conclusions. And I don't think that there's an easy answer here. I'm still honestly trying to process all of this and to give you an opinion on it. But if we are now in a place where there is a powerful man of color who has influence on the NFL, is that not a good thing? And I don't have an answer, but there's part of me that feels like we need more information on it and we need to see how this is going to play out before completely rendering a judgment on it. Like, I saw some of the people's reaction to it was, you know, Jay-Z's a sellout. Okay. I mean, and maybe that will be proven to be true. But if at the end of it, what we're asking for is more opportunities, it's possible that now Jay-Z has become one of the most powerful black men in and around the NFL. And that means that he might be able to open doors for other minorities and women to walk through it. And isn't that what one of the goals is? To be able to be in a place where power and influence is not just in the hands of a select group. But then again, we could also argue, well, Jay-Z is a billionaire. So is he going to adjudicate and influence in the way that will benefit the most people of color and minorities? You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot to try and distill down.
Yeah, and knowing how the NFL likes to make sure they control as much of the narrative about them with their broadcasts, with, you know, their Super Bowl halftime, they want to control as much. And I'm worried that this might be, look, we got Jay-Z. See, everything's fine. Versus Jay-Z actually having a significant amount of control over the creative process of that part of the NFL.
You're right, Tony.
The halftimes and the pregames and stuff like that.
And this is coming off the heels of the NFL and particularly Stephen Ross looking bad because of some of the tentacles of his business. But that's why I go back to the idea of can we align with people on certain subjects, even if we don't align on all? And I don't have an answer for that. But I thought it was worthy of discussion, and I'm glad that Tony and I were able to break it down and maybe bring it to you and have you think about it and comment via text 67011. When we come back, I want to, for some people, I would imagine, introduce you to a decent man. Most of the people in the older part of our demo, I think, know who Tom Dreesen is. We had a wonderful conversation about the Cubs. I'm going to share that conversation with you next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.